Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Good Monday afternoon, everyone. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris. Natalie is off today, not feeling well. Well, dealing with our daughter who a couple weeks ago was out with pneumonia, and now she's got this influenza B. Oh my gosh, it's just been crazy. So she's down and out. Now she's not feeling well. Anyway, you've got the guys here today on the show. Welcome into Redacted, where we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And we're going to dive into a couple of stories that the mainstream media is largely ignoring today on the show. We're going to talk about the globalists. And, you know, the media absolutely loved Pope Francis. Media was totally in the tank for Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. And, of course, the media totally in the tank for the WHO. We've got a lot of stories covering those angles today. Klaus Schwab is out. Pope Francis has died early this morning. And are the globalists on the rope, or are they just simply restructuring behind the scenes? We're going to talk with Mel Kay about that coming up here in just a few moments. We're also going to talk about Iran and nuclear talks. And apparently new reporting coming out about President Trump and Team Trump has not wanted to, of course, pursue an attack on Iran. Well, Israel is pissed about this, as you can imagine. And now there are big moves to try to get Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth out of office. We're going to talk about all of these latest developments on a limited attack against Iran without the help of the Trump administration. Obviously, it would be devastating for the United States if that happened, with over 50,000 American soldiers positioned in the region. So this is a disaster waiting to happen, but we're going to talk about that today on the show. We're also going to talk about the WHO backing down on that pandemic treaty. This is a big move, and they're kind of playing it like this was their plan all along. Never mind the outrage that was seen around the world about this pandemic treaty, basically turning over our sovereignty to the World Health Organization. They're backing down, but apparently, according to them, it was their plan all along to back down. So we've got a lot of globalist stories today to talk about on the show. But first, if you are frustrated with your savings account, you barely earn any money, CDs that don't keep up with inflation, stock market volatility, there is a smarter way. And I say one of the best ways to build wealth is through real estate investing. I've always said this, but a lot of people, you know, it's prohibitively expensive to get started. But you can actually, with our friends over at Connect Invest, invest in short notes that offer up to 9% annualized interest with fixed returns backed by real estate. Start with just $500. Choose terms as little as 6 months and get paid monthly. And Redacted listeners, here's your exclusive deal. Set up your account, make your first investment. You'll receive a $50 bonus just for signing up. So head over to redacted.inc/invest. That's redacted.inc/invest. And start earning more money today with your idle cash that's just sitting there. Again, you can start with as little as $500, and you get a $50 bonus just for starting. Our friends over at Connect Invest. All right. Well, what are the chances, my friends, that Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum resigns? And then immediately we also see WEF globalist Pope Francis, who was working with Klaus Schwab to form a one-world government, suddenly died on the same day, and the WHO backs down. It's all very strange. So are the globalists on the ropes right now and collapsing, or are they restructuring as we speak, sort of behind the scenes? We wanted to bring in Mel Kay. She's the author of Americans Anonymous, Restoring Power to the People, One Citizen at a Time. And Mel has been following what the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab has been doing for years. Excellent reporting on this subject. And we thought, who better than Mel to bring on and talk about this. Mel, great to see you.
Great to see you. Coincidences, I guess.
Yeah, I don't believe in coincidences, but it's so strange. The Pope dies, and then suddenly also we hear that Klaus Schwab is resigning, the WHO backing down. Now, we have reported, and I'm sure you have as well, for almost about a year now that Klaus was preparing to step down, and he was going to be sort of handing the keys over to his family, basically, right? So they're going to kind of keep it in the family. But it's just that the timing seemed very, very strange. It seemed almost immediate. What do you make of this?
Well, first of all, I agree with what you said in the intro. I think that they're reorganizing. I think that they have gotten far too negative press on the people that have been representing them for a long time. And I would keep an eye on the banking institutions behind them, because what is really happening, in my opinion, is that by any means necessary, they want to keep the structure that was above them, basically the IMF, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, all the way up to the Bank of International Settlements, are the partners of these United Nations tentacles and the NGOs. So they're basically at this point doing whatever they need to do to, I think, continue down the path of their plans for Agenda 2030, while at the same time looking like they're going to change their image. But the people you should keep an eye on are the ones that run what I call the parent company. And that would be people like Larry Fink and Mark Carney and Mertz, that just is going to be probably put in Germany. These are all people that created the EU, and which is essentially Davos and the government wing of Davos. And it appears to me that they are reacting, A, to Trump's tariffs, and B, to their own lack of the ability for them to go forward without America. So we do have to realize that I think it's really a change of the narrative, which is they wrote the great narrative, so that's what they do, rather than the end of the globalists. But certainly there is a shakeup in their world.
I think it's fascinating you bring up the financial structure around it, because we saw some moves from the IMF, and you just mentioned the IMF over the past 24 hours about downgrading, you know, the world, basically. The IMF is like, right. Right now the world sucks is basically what their downgrade was over the past 24, you know, moving in that direction. So do you think that this is all part of this?
Yeah, I do. I think that they've been running this whole conglomerate, and you can even go down to the Council of Foreign Relations, Chatham House, all the people that consider themselves the super class and have been in that position basically since 1971, when the World Economic Forum started, when we Kissinger took us off the gold standard, and the EU was born out of the Marshall Fund. Well, right now they have deindustrialized almost the entire Europe that is involved in the EU. They've really hurt, I believe, the nation states within the EU. And I think that they are on the brink of financial collapse in their whole model. And in order to continue down this road, they're pushing towards World War III with no, Russia is not a threat to Europe. And yet you see Macron and Germany and Poland and Estonia all talking about pushing towards war. And I would suggest, as World War I and World War II have proven, they need the war to keep their financial model going. Because if you go to the Bank of International Settlements and their offshoots, the World Trade Organization, IMF, World Bank, they tend to really do well after wars. And I think that they are pushing towards war by any means necessary to keep the financial system structured, because then they go into buying weapons from our military industrial complex, which is, of course, on the stock market, and all partners of the World Economic Forum as well. So we kind of have to look at it as, again, this is a group of people that look at the world in terms of, we own this planet, we're the parent company, and those 8 billion people are lucky they live here. And there's enough pushback between Trump and several leaders around the world, Maloney, obviously Orban, Bukele, there's just leaders everywhere that are siding with Trump on ending the wars. So for me, I think that the model has always been based around, especially that model that leads to Switzerland, paying for both sides of wars in order to create a war economy. And right now, the threat of Trump and others wanting to have peace by any means necessary and figuring out peace is the main problem that they're faced with. And that is really where I think we are. They're rebranding so that we don't really, or they think we won't see the change in dialogue and the change in words and the inversion of words. But I think we've seen it long enough that we will see them come out with a brand new face. It won't be Build Back Better, but it will be something.
You bring up the catalyst. I was going to ask you, I think the catalyst could be a number of things. COVID, it could be some mass pandemic, et cetera, war. And they use this to usher in a lack, you know, to remove our civil liberties, whether it's the Patriot Act. But I think we're marching towards a surveillance state in a way that we maybe didn't anticipate, or there have been smart people who've been anticipating it. But they're sort of couching it around. It's all about our security. It's our border security, you know, biometrics at the border, the real ID, you know, we saw Kristi Noem coming out and pushing that obviously a couple of weeks ago. So it seems like, a different strategy here, or maybe I don't know how they're going to couch it for us. So it seems like they're trying to couch it in terms of our safety once again.
Right.
We always sort of kowtow to this, right? It's always about our safety. We need real ID.
Exactly. And don't forget the global public infrastructure that was built by the UN and the World Economic Forum, with a lot of players that were involved in building the social credit score and the technate that is China, are very invested in that spreading throughout the world. So, you know, the hard part with everyone that was very pro-Trump, Trump won, and it was like, we won. And I was thinking, well, we didn't win until we dismantle this globalist, technocracy that has been built for us. That was Agenda 2030, the 17 development goals, the whole climate emergency, which is all about basically capturing all natural resources and humanity in general in the hands of this small, you know, elitist group of global public-private partner stakeholders. We are at a place where that is the battle. The battle right now is that they have the technology set up. They have all of that. And my questions, when people come out and they say, well, if Trump's recommending Real ID, it can't be bad. They didn't rewrite the Real ID Act in the last few months. This goes all the way back to 9/11, and it wasn't passed multiple times. And now the question is, because we have all the tech bros, you know, up there, we have Larry Ellison, and we have Sachs, and we have, you know, Musk and all of them. Well, they are part of the global public infrastructure with the satellites and the surveillance and the Palantir. So the problem is, we can't be too pro anything that's thrown at us to mean safety or security or stability. Right now, we're kind of like a world that's in one of those glass, you know, things you shake at Christmas, and all the snow's all over the place, and we don't know where it's going to land. And that's why the American people have to pay very close attention to what are you walking into, and are you asking the right questions? Because as we know, data has replaced, and this is worldwide, certainly up to the UN World Economic Forum folks, data has replaced oil and money. So again, where is this data going? Who has access to the Real ID? Is this also on the global public infrastructure? Because the same guys that are, you know, behind this have been behind everything else with the World Economic Forum. And then you have two big World Economic Forum people entering in Germany and probably in Canada. So as much as we, the people of the United States, need to be eyes wide open, we have to ask the right questions. And I don't see enough people other than your show and maybe a couple others even saying, like, well, where does it, is this globalism, but with technocracy, which is worse?
Right. And one of my big disappointments in the sort of the MAGA movement, regardless of how you feel about Trump, is sort of the blindness. They're sort of just sleepwalking into the very things that they fought against, the surveillance state, the censorship industrial complex, this sort of, you know, watching us on our phones, all of this stuff. And I think there's a huge blind spot. Either it's intentional or they just don't know about it on the MAGA side right now, where they're just allowing this to happen. I mean, you saw the story today from Palantir over the past few days. Palantir is helping Doge with a massive IRS data project. So Palantir is all about big data. It has its hands deep inside of the Trump administration right now. And now it's going to be working with Doge on IRS.
And the border. And the truth is, Palantir is a global company. We have to remember these companies like BlackRock and Palantir and these NGOs like Open Society and the Gates Foundation, they are global. We look at them as they are America. They are not America. They are global public-private partners and stakeholders of the World Economic Forum and the international banking cartel, as I call them. So again, we are not prioritizing our local communities, what we're doing in real time, how we're fighting on the ground. We should all be looking at Doge and starting Doges where we are, looking at these names of these NGOs and identifying them in our own backyards, because we have been infiltrated, and this has to do with surveillance and where, like, they put in all these smart meters. People aren't saying, where does that go? People are walking up and getting their eyes scan, not having seen, I guess, Minority Report, not saying, you know, who sees this? What companies are involved here? There's a lot of back doors built in. And we have to also remember that China has a lot of access to our country. And frankly, at this point, it's seeming like the entire Congress and entire D.C. is unwilling or unable to make any moves that are positive for the American people by design. And that would then take me to the idea that a lot of these people are blackmailed, bribed, their family members work for NGOs, lobbyists. We're finding out a lot about all these foreign countries that pay all our universities and are lobbying. Our big deal is that we have to get money and private industry out of politics. I mean, it cannot sustain itself, but as long as it's in there, it's going to push for profit from war and profit from, you know, telling us that we need their help to survive. And here, you know, take your real ID and your internet wallet and go forward. And that's why it's suspect to me that the World Health Organization and some of these other groups look like they're backing down in real time while I see them continuing to build the infrastructure.
Yeah, I think that's the key, right? It's very exciting to see Klaus Schwab, Dr. Evil himself, stepping down, this figurehead, but it's like a hydra. I mean, we know how deep this thing goes into the United Nations. You mentioned like Mark Carney in Canada. So they've got all these proteges, these leaders, these members of Congress, these governors, these mayors. It's infiltrated our school system. Yep. So we need to be vigilant. And this is a time when you can't just sort of blindly say like, oh, I love J.D. Vance. He's amazing. There's a lot to love about the guy. But forget the Palantir connections. Forget the money that, you know, was given. Yeah, just look away from that stuff because you like J.D. Vance.
Right. Well, we also have to start taking responsibility for ourselves. It has been many, many decades. Again, we just had the JFK stuff come out. You're looking at that and you're thinking, how can it be that nobody inside our government has ever been held accountable for betraying the people of this country? Frankly, there's been multiple, all the way up to Crossfire Hurricane and the pandemic, multiple instances of great betrayal. I mean, conspiracy to defraud the people of the United States of America. And yet, a few months into the Trump administration, and we've seen the fraud with Act Blue. We've seen all of this USAID. We've seen the money trail be exposed. And my question is, why can't we go after the white collar crimes that you can easily prove because numbers don't lie and start there? So I am at a place where it's like, I don't want to go on down this path because we all know that once they start giving weapons to the EU that insanely wants to go forward with war, then it starts a whole new financial cycle and we're stuck in it again. And if they just went after some of the money that we have already seen exposed and some of the players, we will have a situation where we the people can actually start to feel like we're in good shape.
Yes. I mean, you saw that meme over the past week with the action figure that was shared all over social media of Pam Bondi. They're calling her the inaction figure. And it's like, you know, we just want arrests. We want prosecutions of these people. Follow the money. It's very easy to do, right? You know exactly.
They did it to Trump. Why can't they do it to one or two people? What about Samantha Power at USAID or Mayorkas? He didn't get a pardon. These people betrayed the people of the United States or the 51 intelligence agents that conspired to lie to the country before an election. There are things that we know could if it was the other side, they would have been indicted within 4 days. And that's where the frustration, I think, is coming with people that really worked to get Trump in there and now are saying, OK, well, only a few more months and then their 2026 cycle will kick in and all the billionaires will pour in again and we'll be right where we were.
Yeah, we need more people like you out there, Mel, seriously, who not afraid to tell the truth and no BS, you know, not pulling your punches. I just can't. I'm just over the people pulling their punches. Stop pulling your punches. We need to punch hard and we need to punch back at this stuff. And I love what you do. So, Mel, thanks so much for joining us. The book is Americans Anonymous, Restoring Power to the People, One Citizen at a Time. Go read it. Great book. Mel, great to see you. Thank you so much, as always.
Thank you so much.
All right, we got more news to get to here. I want to talk about this. Well, here's a little light note here before our next guest here. So you talk about these environmentalists, man. This whole green agenda, the environmentalists coming after you. Now they've done it again. Now the climate cult has officially lost their damn minds, and now they're coming for your dog. They're coming for my dog. Yeah, according to a new study cooked up by eco-extremists and published in the liberal rag Mother Jones, Mother Jones is all over this, of course, our dog companions are suddenly environmental villains. Because apparently feeding, walking, and loving your dog is somehow destroying the planet, so we should stop having dogs. Screw you! Screw you, you're not taking away my dog. You can't make this stuff up, seriously. So this latest psychotic meltdown comes out of the University of Winchester in the UK, where a lot of crazy stuff comes lately, the United Kingdom, where researchers say dogs are a problem for climate change, but don't worry, they have a solution for you. First, it's best not to have a dog, so just get rid of your dog, okay? But if you have to have one, then make them eat bugs and seaweed instead of their normal meat-based diet. I'm not joking. They want your golden retriever to stop eating meat, start eating cricket proteins and seaweed so that little Greta Thunberg can sleep better at night. I got news for you. Have you ever tried to feed a dog like vegan food? Like you can lie to yourself and pretend that they love it, but they of course don't. Dogs don't laugh, but they will laugh in your face and then they'll pee on your carpet. They're not having it. You can tell. I have seen the videos where like I feed my dog vegan food. They love it. And there's a dog chewing a carrot and you can just see the sadness in his eyes. But here's the real kicker. They admit that yes, dogs make people happier. They reduce stress and are good for your health. But according to these lunatics, the personal joy comes at the planet's expense. So now loving your dog is apparently selfish. This is all part of the same disgusting climate agenda that we've seen over and over again. Demonize normal human behavior and companionship in the name of some fake climate virtue. They don't want you having a family. They don't want you growing your family. They don't want you using light bulbs, incandescent light bulbs. They don't want you to use regular shower heads. You got to have low flow shower heads. Then gas stoves, they came for that, of course. Get your gas guzzling car. You can't have that. You need to go buy an electric car. Then your hamburger or your steak, you can't eat that anymore. You got to eat bugs. And now your dog. No, I'm done. I'm sorry. Here at Redacted, we are unapologetically pro-dog. Like you're going to, this is my little guy. This is my little dog, Grover. This is my puppy. He's a little bit bigger than that now. He's a mini pincher. But I mean, you know, my favorite part of the day, one of my favorite parts of the day, other than doing the show, is taking him, him on a walk as he tries to chase prairie dogs and all of that. David, your dog Pizza. Like, I think you'd freak out if they came for your dog Pizza. That's his dog's name, by the way, not a plate of food. And if loving your dog is considered a crime, then we're proudly guilty here at Redacted.
Yep. So guilty as charged.
Yeah, guilty as charged. Like David will be over here in the studio working and be like, man, I got to get home to Pizza. Pizza, like I know I need to see Pizza right now. So. Yeah, you're not touching them. Ridiculous. All right, we've got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about Iran's nuclear talks and this attack on Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Seems coordinated, doesn't it? Where a lot of interesting people have come out of the woodwork and suddenly started attacking the Secretary of Defense. You know why? Because he doesn't want to go to war in Iran. Could it be that? Or could it be something totally separate? Are you going to blame it on a signal chat? Fake stories that have been coming out from NPR News and other organizations trying to push him out because, you know, the neocons need to rise in Washington, D.C. We need war. They're like these Satanists. They're like, they just gobble it up. They need it. It's their fuel, war. We're going to talk about that with Drew Berquist, who's going to be joining us here in a moment. But first, we got to tell you about our friends over at IQ Joe and their unbelievable IQ bars. Their instant mushroom coffee from IQ Bar with bold flavors, loaded with functional brain nutrients, 200 milligrams of caffeine for jitter-free energy. I've been a huge fan of these guys. We've been grabbing their bars, their IQ bars on the go, their protein bars. They're fantastic. They're free of gluten. They're free of sugar. They're free of soy. They're free of GMOs. But now they have this delicious coffee, which is fantastic. Their black coffee of toasted hazelnut, vanilla spice. IQ Joe offers coffee shop flavors without the extra sugar. I am really serious about my coffee. So when they sent this over a few weeks ago, I'm like, I'm going to give this a try. And I have to say, it's really fantastic. And the kids are putting them in their lunches now, like the IQ bars. It's a part of their snack every day in their lunch at school. Cause we know they're okay. No sugar, but they get some protein, no soy, no GMOs, no gluten. And the coffee is fantastic. I was skeptical. Coffee can be a big expense if you're spending every morning in the drive-through. And IQ's Joe's instant mushroom coffee packs pack in the flavor without the high price. So try it right now. Text redacted. Text the word redacted to 64,000, 64,000 to get 20% off all IQ bar products plus free shipping. And I've even seen them at Costco now. But you're going to save more money than you'll get them at Costco. You can actually save money with us, more money with us. You get free shipping and you get 20% off. So cheaper than Costco? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Text the word redacted to 64,000 and get 20% off. And just give it a try. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. I like the peanut butter one. It's really good. My kids like the chocolate one as well. All right. Remember.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Do you remember, guys, a few weeks ago when Benjamin Netanyahu came to the White House and Trump shocked Bibi and told him that the United States was going to hold direct talks with Iran? And you saw Netanyahu kind of like do the what? And he started like getting all nervous and his hands started fluttering around and he didn't know what to do with his hands. Well, Israeli media, not U.S. media, Israeli media are reporting that Netanyahu wasn't even planning to come. He was in Hungary at the time when he was suddenly summoned by President Trump to get to Washington, D.C., ASAP. Usually it's the other way around. Like we do Israel's bidding. Like, hey, Trump, get here. Yes, I'll be right there, sir. But this time Trump said, come here. And he did. And he wasn't planning to meet him. And he got the news while he was in Hungary with Viktor Orban. And he was told, get here now. Israeli media said that Bibi was shocked about the U.S. holding talks with Iran directly, not using some sort of a proxy. And we're hearing that Trump told him the U.S. would not be involved in attacking Iran directly. Who knows if indirectly at this point? I mean, we provide their weapons. Well, we're now hearing that Israel is still contemplating a, quote, limited strike on Iran without the United States' help. And we're also hearing that that's not making the White House very happy at all. And could all of this have to do with Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth with this massive attack campaign against him over the Signal chat story over the past few days? Well, Drew Berquist is author of The Maverick Experiment, former CIA, joins us now to dive into this. And I like Drew's take on this. Very, very clear-headed on all of this. Not spinning propaganda. Drew, welcome back to the show. Good to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's good to be here.
So a lot to unpack here, but I think I don't believe in coincidences. And I have sources who are telling me that this is a coordinated attack. I don't know what your sources are telling you on Pete Hegseth, but here's a guy who's saying we're not going to attack Iran for you. And we have the reporting last week about President Trump waving off this attack. The group around him, J.D. Vance, Tulsi Gabbard, Pete Hegseth, and even neocon Mike Waltz was like real skeptical about it. And then you have this suddenly coordinated attack. NPR releases this piece. I'll put this up on the screen. The White House has begun the process of looking for a new Secretary of Defense, to which Rapid Response 47, which is the White House response, said wrong, fake news. So to me, all of this smells dirty and it all smells like it's part of the same story. What say you, Drew?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I've been listening to you talk about it and we've spoken about it as well over on my show. And this just reeks of typical DC nonsense, right? You're not going to go along with our plan. You're not going to let us make money and get involved in more wars. Then we're going to come after you. We're going to smear you. We're going to try and force you out of your position. The difference is with this administration is they just don't care. Like, Pete's our guy. He's on board with what we're trying to do here. So that tactic is not going to work here. And I think it's absolutely right. And it drives, I mean, nothing drives DC and the neocons and all the different warhawks that are there, the military industrial complex writ large, more crazy than people pushing back and having a sensible approach to foreign policy and wars. Like, maybe we shouldn't do that. Like, we shouldn't actively seek out getting involved in more stuff that we don't actually need to be involved in. And that to them just breaks their brain. Like, what? Like, what are we going to do then? So they go on the offensive. And I think that's absolutely part of what's happening here.
And I can tell you sources I've spoken to have members of Israeli off the books, members of the Israeli intelligence community who are jumping on social media. They have Mossad connections. That's confirmed. And they are actively torpedoing Pete Hegseth, and they're putting out false reports about this. So this clearly seems like it's coordinated, that maybe Israel is pissed that the Trump administration is stepping back and not wanting to be involved in this direct attack on Iran. I mean, I don't see another way to read it. To me, it's like Occam's razor. But
yeah, I think it's 100% right. And you said it earlier, like, we have always historically, it's been the opposite. We have done the bidding of Israel, and it's not to say that they can't be allies and friends, but it also doesn't mean that we just have to sit back and take it and do whatever they say. That's just not practical. It's not smart. And in this situation, they're trying to bully the person or the country that they need most in their corner into doing something that just doesn't make sense. And it's not going well. So they're having to stoop to tactics like that. And look, Mossad's really capable. There's some components of that government who are super capable in terms of the intel stuff, information operations, all the stuff that they do. And sometimes that bites us in the back end. So, like, I think it totally makes sense what's going on there. And this broader conversation, the overall issue that's happening, is just utter insanity.
What benefit would there be to the United States for the United States to help attack Iran?
Zero. I mean, there's no benefit whatsoever. It makes no sense. It would escalate things so quickly. Look, would we curb stomp the you know what out of Iran in a country on country conflict? Absolutely. Do we want that? No. The American people have overwhelmingly said in the mandate to President Trump and this new administration, we don't want foreign wars. And that was pretty clear the first time around too. But we don't want foreign wars. Iran stirs up all sorts of stuff all over the globe, not just in the Middle East. And this would absolutely escalate into something much, much bigger. If we did this, there's no benefit. Look, we're so used to in this country and accustomed to fighting wars for the sake of wars. Oh, what if they've got bad intentions? They're close to nuclear weapons. All those things are true. Their government, not the people on the streets, but their government are terrible, and they hate us so much, and they hate Israel. But that doesn't mean that we just send our sons and daughters to fight. And this is a weird thing for me too. I'll tell you, like, I used to be in, you know, I deployed nearly 30, over 30 times, I think, to the Middle East doing operations for the intel community. And we, myself and my teammates, we were hungry for war. Like, where's the new war? Let's go get it. And I'm so mad at myself for feeling that way back in the day, because now it's like, man, this is so dumb. We should steer clear of this at all cost if we can. And because it really is, there's no benefit to us really whatsoever.
Well, that's an incredible sign of maturity. I mean, to say, you know, I'm so mad at myself for feeling that way, and you've grown tremendously. And I think a lot of veterans would say the same thing. Veterans that we have on the show, whether it's Colonel McGregor or Colonel Davis or, you know, you name it, they've been there, they've seen it, they've killed men. And they're like, absolutely, we should not be involved in these foreign boondoggles anymore. It's only enriching the military industrial complex, and it's destroying the United States of America. Full stop.
Yeah. 100%. It's destroying families. The phone calls that are made, all of the stuff that comes with it is just terrible. And when it comes to these situations, and it seems like we're starting down this path now with Trump and Hegseth and Tulsi and some of the folks that are in lockstep with him on this, is look, when it comes, sometimes it's the simple answers right in front of you. When it comes to these foreign wars and these, even with Israel, who has been a friend on a lot of issues, I think there's some other stuff that doesn't get talked about enough in that relationship, but different episode. Like, we just because they're our friends and they want to go do something stupid and start a full-scale war with Iran doesn't mean that we should be involved. Like, we've got to be able to do that, whether it's there or in Ukraine with Europe and the little dancer dude over there. Like, hey, man, if you want to do stupid stuff, go ahead by all means. We're going to do our thing over here and just kind of watch from afar. Like, we don't have to get involved in this. And historically, we always have. But we make so many decisions in this country, whether it's about war or the economy or the border or fill in the blank with, well, that's how we've always done it. Well, how we've always done it is stupid. Like, name something right that we've done smartly over our lifetimes. And the more that we get older and we do mature and we see things differently, it's like, oh, man, like, we've done it all wrong.
Yeah, it's really true. I can't point to a single instance where I said, yeah, this is great. You know, what we did in Iraq, it's been fantastic, which was Israel's bidding, was Israel's bidding, by the way. What we did in Libya has been fantastic. What we helped coordinate in Syria has been fantastic. Afghanistan, Serbia, Somalia, Haiti. I mean, it fries my brain to think about it. I can't wrap my head. Do you think that the Trump administration is going to cave on this? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm saying this. I think the Israeli lobby, the APEC organizers, the Mossad people who are actively going on social media and slamming Pete Hegseth are really trying to bring him down. They want to replace him with a neocon in there, absolutely do the bidding of this. Do you think that Trump is going to be successful in stopping this and protecting Pete Hegseth, or do you think they're going to cave by the end of the week?
I have my concerns. I don't know. The short answer is I don't know. I think that, you know, historically there's been some decisions, particularly when it comes to personnel and understanding DC and just how the whole thing works. He understands it a lot better this time. He's got, you know, less to lose this time. But I also wouldn't say without reservation, like, oh no, he'll never cave on this. The administration will do the right thing. I don't feel that confident about it. I'd like to think that they'll do the right thing here. But there's been enough things over the years, including the last term. And look, I love Trump. Trump's done amazing things. I'm all about it. Voted for him 3 times. But he's also not perfect. The administration's not perfect. And he's operating in this broke-ass environment that is DC, where nothing makes sense and it doesn't work and everyone's out to get you. So I wouldn't be shocked. I think it's kind of a coin flip.
Yeah. We'll see if he caves, but you know, we had, I'll just play this and we'll get you out of here, Drew. This is from this morning, just a few, because we saw yesterday President Trump at that Easter egg roll saying that, you know, Pete's doing a great job. Ask how great he's doing. Ask the Houthis how he's doing, you know? but anyway, he said, I fully back support him. And then this morning, Caroline Leavitt, once again, doubling down on this. So take a look at that. There it goes. Go ahead, play this one.
The president stands strongly behind Secretary Hegseth, who is doing a phenomenal job leading the Pentagon. And this is what happens when the entire Pentagon is working against you and working against the monumental change that you are trying to implement. Secretary Hegseth was nominated for this position because he is standing up for the war fighter, the men and women in uniform who are putting their lives on the line to protect our country and our homeland. And unfortunately, there have been people at that building who don't like the change the secretary is trying to bring, so they are leaking and they are lying to the mainstream media. We've seen this game played before. The secretary is doing a tremendous job, and the president stands strongly behind him.
So something she said there stood out to me. The entire Pentagon is against him. You know, he's there trying to, that's 20,000 people. Do you think that's the case?
I think that seems a little extreme, but I think that that's a thing that we tend to forget on our side. You know, everyone's so excited about the wins we're getting. This cabinet's great. You know, Trump's doing so many great things with executive orders. Hopefully we can get to the point where we're doing some more of it with law. But there's still so much left over. I mean, starting back with the Obama administration, the amount of people that kind of infiltrated all these organizations throughout the country, not just in DC, but all these organizations everywhere, there's a lot of people there who are still not on board with everything we're doing. And some of them have some clout. Now, do they have as much clout as SecDef or obviously the president? No, but there is going to be pushback. So I think that there's that. When it comes to the caving, by the way, it's just so nice not to have someone in an Easter bunny suit have to wrangle presidents or staff at the Easter, at the egg roll. But the thing is with this, like I would be shocked if they caved on him. I say coin flip because I have my concerns about how strong DC is. I'm more concerned about caving on the Israel issue than I am about actually on Pete. That's where I hope he really, and the two should go in lockstep, obviously, but that's where I hope that he really Trump, Pete, Tulsi, all of them remain in lockstep and just say, no, we can be friends. You're not doing this. If you do it, you're on your own. You know, we'll see where it goes from there. But that number, you know, I don't know. It's not that many. Like, but these organizations are very partisan now. I mean, I'm telling you, the intel community that I lived in towards the end was very different than the beginning. There was lots of you were encouraged, or at least maybe not encouraged, but coddled when you spoke out about administration, something you're not supposed to do. Like, I always just served whoever the president was. I disagree with Obama, but I'm going to go do the mission, and he's going to make it hard for us to do the mission. It's going to be terrible. And people are going to leave their jobs, but I'm going to do what we're supposed to do. And then when Trump's there, we're going to do it this way. But the culture shift has been strong, and it does carry some weight.
Now, I appreciate what you're saying. I hope that, hey, you know, they took some Israel lobbying money during the campaign, but that is enough to, that's not enough for them to like make changes inside their administration and go to war with Iran. No, thank you. Thank you for, we still have Israel's support. But we are not going to put Americans in the line of fire in Iran, despite the fact that we took lobbying money from you for my presidential campaign. I hope that's the case. Drew, great to see you. You know, love your take on this, and I think it's a really clear-headed take. So we'll see at the end of the week here. Hopefully these reports are false, that Pete will not be out by the end of the week.
I sure hope
thanks,
so.
Drew. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday, if you can believe it. We're going to talk about the WHO backing down. You know, they made it sound like, oh, this is all part of the plan. We're just going to back down on this pandemic treaty that was all part of the plan all along. No, it wasn't. There was global outrage about giving up our sovereignty to the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization and your pandemic treaty so that governments couldn't say and how to handle the next pandemic that pops up, the bird flu, swine flu, whatever it happens to be, lockdowns, digital currency, all of those things. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the death of Pope Francis. And, you know, Catholicism has been rising among young people. A lot of young people turning to Catholicism and conservative Catholicism, conservative values, traditional family values. So we've seen a huge spike, actually, recently among young people, but there's a push for traditional Catholicism, maybe not the type that was under Pope Francis, the liberal type. So what does the future of the church look like for Catholics? We're going to talk to Father Robinson about that coming up in just a few minutes on that. But first, I don't know if you've seen the U.S. dollar tanking, gold surging to its all-time high for $3,424 as I speak right now, an all-time high for gold prices. Unbelievable. And the IMF downgrading basically the world, saying we could be on the precipice of a massive global recession. That's not good news. Fiat currencies in the tank. President Trump slamming Jerome Powell, calling him worthless, telling him to get out of there. So the U.S. dollar is in huge flux, taking a nosedive, but gold prices, even Bitcoin, shot up. Gold prices at $3,400 an ounce right now. I'm a big fan of the fact that, like, that's great that gold has gone up. I don't invest in gold for it to go up. I invest as a store of value. So if I put $2,000 into gold, I expect that it'll remain about that value or go up. And that's been what it has been for my family. But now I'm thrilled that gold is up even 3% today and skyrocketing. But I believe gold and precious metals are a way to protect your family through times of turmoil. It's been around for 5,000 years when every government currency in world history has collapsed, all of them. But gold and silver have sustained. So anyway, I think it's now time. You know, we've been saying this for years on this show. I started investing in gold when it was about $1,700, $1,800 an ounce. Now it's at $3,400 an ounce. Are you going to wait till it's $4,000 an ounce, $5,000 an ounce before you just even put a little bit of your U.S. dollars into precious metals? I don't care how you do it or if you do it at all, but I want you guys to be protected. Make sure that you're protecting your family, because what happens if the U.S. dollar collapses, plummets in value? We saw inflation. So our friends over at Lear Capital can help you do that. I would just get on the phone with them. There's no obligation. Just call them. They have an 800 number. Talk to them. Tell them your situation. Hey, maybe you have an old IRA sitting around. You have an old 401k that you left a company. Well, you can actually roll that over into a self-directed IRA. You can invest in real estate with it. You can invest in gold. You can buy stocks in a self-directed IRA. And guess the best part is Wall Street doesn't control it. You do. And actually, one of the biggest parts of Lear's business is actually helping people convert their 401ks or their old IRA into a self-directed account so that you control it, that you have control over it, and Wall Street does not. And then you can invest in precious metals. It's a brilliant way to do it. I have my IRA is invested in precious metals. And so is my wife, so is Natalie's, and our kids. We actually have our kids set up with their own IRAs, their self-directed IRAs, that they invest in precious metals as well. I'm telling you, it's the way to do it. Talk to them on the phone, and they can help you do it. They're an education company first. So call them, 1-800-613-3557. They're an American company. They're a patriotic company. Or just go to the website learredacted.com and ask how you can start getting invested in precious metals. Even if you're just starting with $50, turn that into precious metals instead of U.S. dollars right now, because I wouldn't want my family's future tied to what happens with Jerome Powell, for crying out loud. That's for damn sure. All right, let's talk about the WHO, shall we? The World Health Organization is defeated in its original pandemic treaty, and that is a huge win. This is the treaty that they tried to get every nation state to sign that would have given them the power to declare pandemics, lockdowns, vaccine mandates, vaccine passports, infodemics, meaning information they didn't like that they thought could be some sort of problem and possibly lead to a pandemic. I mean, literally fighting against information. The globalist hell of a document went through several drafts. We covered it extensively here on the show. It was supposed to be ratified in May of 2024, but then you remember countries protested. Remember countries in Africa, a number of countries in Africa stood up and said no. Not including the United States, though, under President Biden. They were all in on giving up our sovereignty to the WHO. The Biden administration loved it. They were prepared to sign the damn thing. They championed it. And by the way, if you spoke out against it, you would be banned and censored on social media like we were. Have videos deranked, demonetized, or blocked altogether. They didn't want you talking out against this. They wanted it. This was a huge move by Tedros and Klaus Schwab and all of these clowns. We can thank Australia, Japan, Slovakia, and some politicians in the UK and others for protesting this treaty. And at the outset, again, a number of countries in Africa that said no way. And by the way, we can thank the Trump administration for withdrawing from the WHO. So there is no chance of the United States even signing this document. Great news. The U.S. is not totally out of the WHO, though, so don't get too excited about it. The U.S. is still a part of the PAHO, which is the Pan-American Health Organization, which is the America's branch of the WHO. But there's no push to sign this treaty. No one in the Trump administration is pushing for this. So what will the pandemic treaty be now that it's been totally castrated? It's become totally impotent. We don't know for sure because they haven't published the new draft yet. They only announced that they have finalized the treaty and will submit a draft at the upcoming World Health Assembly in May. Now, what we need to look for is whether or not they have made these edits. You may recall that in 2023, they updated their Global Powers Treaty and made this edit, meaning the countries were under obligations to do what they said. Yeah, you have to do what we say. Remember this non-binding advice? Means just advice. Standing recommendation means non. So they just got rid of the non-binding part. Well, the announcement of the new treaty makes assurances that they do not mean to take over a nation's sovereignty. Okay. Just a little side thing we just dropped in there. We don't mean to take away your sovereignty. But this proposal affirms the sovereignty of countries to address public health matters within their borders and provides that nothing in the draft agreement shall be interpreted as providing WHO with authority to direct, order, alter, or prescribe national laws or policies or mandates to states to take specific actions such as ban or accept travelers, impose vaccination mandates or therapeutic or diagnostic measures, or implement lockdowns. So it took all of us yelling and screaming and countries standing up and saying absolutely not for them to add in this nugget. It says, it's crazy. Go ahead, Phil.
But then what is the point of this treaty? Because if the treaty does nothing, it seems to have no, like, what,
no
what,
teeth.
what are they? Yeah, no. Well, not even no teeth. It looks like they took the mouth off of it. They're just saying like we have no. we're just going to advise. Like, okay, you could do that. What am I signing? Why? It's a waste of time.
Right. Well, in many ways, it's like with the United Nations, right? We're not taking away your sovereignty, but we'll kind of tell you what to do. You know, and you still have your sovereignty, but let's be honest, you really don't. You know, you're part of the EU. You still have your sovereignty, but let's be honest. If you want that money, if you want us to be doing anything to help, sorry, you're going to have to adhere to our plan. Like that's the way it works, right? It'll be money. It'll be some sort of other directorate.
Sort of like the EU wants to take away Hungary's ability to vote in the EU. Like you can still right. be here, but you can no longer vote because we don't like how yeah. you vote. That's not, it's not very democratic.
Right. Exactly. So it says that it affirms the sovereignty of countries to address the public health matters within its own borders. So they don't want to do those things now. Like, of course, we never wanted to do that. Like we knew better all along. Really? But the pandemic treaty drafts, the WHO had a placeholder for infodemics, which gave them the power to censor people in all member countries. They could just censor you. It didn't matter if you had a sovereign, like we can literally, if there's an overabundance of information, accurate or not, which makes it difficult for individuals to adopt behaviors that will protect their health, blah, blah, blah. We can basically just come in and censor your country. Censor it. I mean, we saw the United Nations boasting how they basically controlled climate results in Google search results. So the United Nations like controls Google search results. Okay. So they can just block out information that's not part of their plan. We talked about this earlier, but it would make it difficult for individuals to adopt behaviors that they want you to, basically. So I don't want to see that word come back in the documents at all. Infodemics. It's ridiculous. We will read it when they finally publish it. We don't have the draft yet. They're supposed to have the document give like 6 months advance of voting according to Article 73 of the WHO Constitution so that member states actually have adequate time to review and deliberate on the significant changes. But their announcement seems to indicate that they will publish it in May of this year and then put it up for a vote so few countries will have a chance to fully review it and then debate it back home, kind of sneaky. This is like what we do in Congress. Like, oh, here's this massive budget. Go vote on it. The vote's tonight, and it's 11,000 pages. Who's going to read it? Will they try to read it fast in May? I don't know. You should tell your lawmakers, though, that you want time to consider it, that your country needs time to consider it. Nevertheless, I do see this as a major backing down from the WHO on the sovereignty question. And, you know, this is, again, the United States is not part of it, but we'll see if these other countries take part in it as well. But it seems to be a big blow to globalists in the past few days, which I'm very excited about. All right, we're coming up on the show. We're going to talk about Pope Francis's death. And, you know, this is coming at a time when Catholicism is actually on the rise. Young people turning to the church, turning to spirituality. They're sick of the woke agenda. And they want traditional family values again, you know, maybe a husband and a wife, raising kids, taking care of a family. Strange. It's kind of crazy, actually. So do they want another Pope Francis, who was really liberal, was a media darling, loved having, transgender dancers at the church? I'm sure you've seen those videos, right? So, or will it be more of a traditional Catholic Pope coming up next? We're going to talk about that. In just a second, we sure will. But first, with everything that's happening in the economy right now, it feels like we're all walking on shaky ground. Prices are stuck at really high levels. It seems like nothing is affordable anymore. I mean, everything, prices of just about everything going up. So no matter, many are relying on credit cards just to cover the gaps right now. Credit card debt is skyrocketing. It's leaving a lot of people stressed out. If you're a homeowner, you don't have to face the uncertainty alone. Our friends over at American Financing can help you take control. They can actually help you get access to the equity in your home to help you pay down that high interest credit card debt. You basically be trading one financial product for another. I always say you can't eat equity. If you're sitting there on equity in your own home and you've got massive credit card debt, like can you leverage that equity to pay down that high debt? So you don't lose your home. I mean, that's the thing. They can come after your assets. You don't want that. On average, people just like you, are saving $800 a month. Plus, they may close your loan in as little as 10 days. Don't let the chaos of the economy get the best of you. Call American Financing now. It'll cost you nothing to get started. You may delay two mortgage payments, giving you a cushion in this uncertain time. 866-890-8434. That's 866-890-8434. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. They are NMLS number is 182334. You can check that out at NMLSConsumerAccess.org. All right. How's everyone doing in the chat today? Again, yeah, Natalie's off today as a result of my daughter being sick. She got this influenza B. We were on the phone with the doctor, and he's like, yeah, it's the hardest strain of it right now. It's really, really bad. So she got the worst of it. So just, you know, lots of fluids, lots of tea. Got outside, got some vitamin D in the sunshine a little bit, but man, she's got to ride this thing out. So Natalie's tending to her, but then she started feeling a little sick. I'm like, oh my gosh. It's been chaos. I swear to God. It's like, can we catch a break? Can we catch a break around here? It'd be nice if we could. And you know, when you got kids, you got three kids and they're all in different schools. It's like they're petri dishes, you know, picking up everything from the schools and God knows what else. So anyway, enough about that. But if you're wondering where Natalie is today, she's taking care of our little one. So, all right, well, let's talk about this. This morning, Pope Francis, the Vatican declared that Pope Francis had died. Age 88 years old, Monday of Easter Monday death. So it comes at a time, actually, it's really interesting, when Catholicism is on the rise, especially among young people. It's actually a lot, really surprising. I remember back 10 years ago when I was on, still when I was anchoring Fox and Friends on the Fox News channel back in the day, we'd have, you know, Cardinal Dolan on, we'd have Father Jonathan Morris on, and we talk about how young people are just leaving the church. They had a demographic problem. People just did not want to be in the church anymore. But now, over the past year, you know, it's really shifted. So do they want another Pope Francis? He was definitely a media darling, beloved for his progressive takes on gay marriage. And when I say media darling, like the liberal media loved him. They loved that he welcomed, you know, transgender dancers to the church. That he pushed climate change agenda, that he was different. He was actually pretty different, actually, from liberals on Ukraine and the Russian war. Like, he was anti-war, where many liberals and Democrats have been pushing vehemently for war in the Middle East and in Ukraine. He wanted it to stop. Liberals, of course, wanted global war. He condemned the wars the media has wanted him to. He rang in on the progressive issues that the media championed, like climate change, again, gay marriage, transgender issues. But is this what Catholics want in a new pope? Joining us now to discuss this is Father Calvin Robinson, who's often been quite outspoken about the church's woke policies over the past few years. And he joins us now. Father, great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure.
So where do you think things sit right now? I mean, you see two camps kind of emerging. I think I maybe explained both sides of this. Social media saying, wow, the woke pope has died. What will the church look like going forward? Will we have a return to traditional Catholic values? Or are we moving in a totally new direction? Where do you see things going for the Catholic Church worldwide?
If we look at the younger generation, over this last couple of months, we've had lots of data come out from different organizations that shows that younger people are seeking tradition. They are finding the Catholic faith. And this is across the West, particularly in America and in my home country, Great Britain, where we have the Church of England, which has been the predominant Christian denomination for the last 500 years. And for the first time ever, it looks like Catholics are taking over. So we're seeing this across the board, this finding of traditional worship and traditional Christian values. And I think this is probably despite the Pope, to be honest. His teaching on family and divorce, his teaching on homosexuality, and his teaching on the traditional Latin Mass has been problematic. But we are a faith that thrives under persecution, and we've seen that traditionalists within the Catholic faith have been oppressed and suppressed for a while. And so as a result of that is growing. So actually good fruit is being his bearing out of it. So God is working through that scenario. And so I'm hoping that the next pontiff happens to be a conservative, traditional, properly sound Catholic, because that will be, it's just the perfect timing. As young, as the next generation are looking for tradition and sound doctrine, if a pope stands up now that can embrace them and embrace the tradition of the church, it could be a good thing for the world, actually, if we see a return to Christendom in the West, away from liberalism and progressive secularism and all the things that are tearing us apart and introducing a death culture. We could head back away from the light, sorry, away from the darkness, back towards the light, which would be a wonderful thing to behold.
The death culture. That's a powerful statement. I think you're right about that. I mean, you see these videos of girls on social media, like twerking and dancing, celebrating the fact that they're just going to get their 30th abortion. You know, like this is the kind of stuff that I think is turning off. I see it among my son's friends. You know, he's 14 years old. They can't stand this woke stuff. And it sort of grew naturally. Like, we didn't push it on them. You know, we weren't like pushing our like redacted agenda on them. Like, and you just see it amongst his friends group. They can't stand that stuff. It really bothers them. And it's been startling to see this move, this shift towards tradition, family values, pushing away that sickness, the death culture, as you say. I'm encouraged by it, to be honest.
Yeah, there's something unnatural about the death culture, isn't there? Well, I mean, the clue is in the name, but the adults of the last two generations, from the boomers onwards, really, have been embracing it because we've been taught that we have to be nice. So the millennials, Gen X, and the boomers have been trying to be nice. And so going along with whatever is thrown at us to be nice. Whereas actually, as kids come into adolescence, they're exploring what's true, right? And so the Catholic faith teaches what's true, what's beautiful, and what's good. And so that's why they're being attracted to that, away from what's nice, because what's nice isn't always true. It's definitely not always good, and it's certainly not always beautiful. You know, if we look at anything from the trans ideology to the promotion of abortion, these things are inherently evil in that they are undermining our connection with our bodies, our connection with our Lord, our connection with life itself. And so everywhere we look around us in the secular, agnostic, kind of liberal progressive world, we're seeing an embracing of things that are counter natural. And so as this next generation comes up, they're saying, well, where is the truth? Where is the goodness? Where is the beauty? And they seek it where they find it. Because, you know, we call these things transcendental for a reason. They take us out of ourselves and remind us that there is something greater than ourselves. That's the whole purpose of the faith. It's the whole purpose of the church, to be a hospital to sinners, to say, actually, there is a God, and that God loves you. And as hard as life gets at times, and you know, Easter's a great reminder of this, as difficult as life can get, there is always a great creator who loves you, and loves you so much that he gave his only son to die for you. And if you have faith in him and repent of your sins, he offers you eternal salvation, like never-ending love, a relationship that goes on for all eternity, embraced in the heart, in the arms of the one true living God. There's nothing more beautiful than that.
You know, it was interesting. I had a chance to sit down with my friend, my old co-host and friend Tucker Carlson a few weeks ago. And one of the things we talked about was the persecution of Catholics, the persecution of Christians. And I said, why do you think that is? Why has there been this massive persecution in the past couple of years? And he said pretty straightforward. He said, I think it's rooted in love. And really at the heart of it is they are, it's really the only religion that is anti-war. And I think there's something to that. What do you think of that and the persecution that we've seen of Catholics and Christians over the past number of years?
Yeah, I think the persecution has grown, particularly over the last few years, for the reason, I mean, God permits it for the reason of strengthening the faith of people. So if you look at my country, for example, the United Kingdom, we've been, England in particular has been Christian since its inception, right? So since Rex Anglorum, since our first King of England, we've had the Christian faith as the established faith of the land. And that's meant that people have taken the faith for granted. If you look 100 years ago, or just over to the Edwardian period, everybody went to church. Everyone identified as Christian, and the whole of society was built on Christian values. Our common law was based on the Ten Commandments, etc. And so we've never really had to fight for our faith, not in a long time. And so persecution has been introduced over these last few decades as the world comes into a different vibe, where secular ideals are promoted as the new norm. And so for the first time in a long time, Christians have had to fight for what they believe in. And under that persecution, there's a zeal, there's a rigor. And so people are having to really think through what is their theology? What does it mean to be a worshiper of Jesus Christ? How do I have to live my life? Do I have to live my life different to the rest of society around me? And well, the answer to that question is yes. And that's hard. That's difficult. And that's part of the Catholic faith. And it's not easy. And we'll be hated because of it. But our Lord said he was hated before us. And that's something that we bear in mind because the rest of the world is teaching avoid suffering at all costs, right? We live in a world where women can kill their babies before they're born, or people can kill their elderly loved ones if they become a burden, whether financially or emotionally. It's because we're told to avoid suffering, end people's suffering, end your own suffering, end everyone else's suffering. Whereas actually, the Christian faith is about embracing our suffering. It's finding the joy in our suffering, and it's reminding each other that we're not ever alone in our suffering because He suffered for us and He suffers alongside us. And that returns us to that idea that God loves us eternally, and it's truly beautiful. And so through His grace, we are given the strength to embrace and walk through that suffering. And that's where we get our resilience from. That's where we get our stoicism from. We look at the generation that doesn't have any resilience, the generation that cries over working a 9 to 5 in Starbucks and posts TikTok videos about how awful their life is when they've really got no difficulties at all. It's because they've never embraced suffering.
Now I know why they call you the canceled priest, right? Because you were canceled for these types of views. I love it. Someone else who was canceled was Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, who was very outspoken against Pope Francis. He was, he calling him an enthusiastic collaborator in the World Economic Forum, a huge part of the Great Reset. Then he was excommunicated. I mean, Vigano was excommunicated by Pope Francis after exposing him. I just want to play a few seconds here of him talking about Pope Francis and his collaboration with, like, Klaus Schwab. Watch this.
The fourth revolution theorized by Klaus Schwab and the family of international finance find in Bergoglio not a neutral spectator, which would itself already be an unheard of thing, but actually a zealous cooperator who abuses his own moral authority in order to support a destra.
Yeah. So not just an innocent bystander, but a collaborator with Klaus Schwab. So where do you, I mean, I'll get you out of here on this, Father, which is, are we going to see a return to traditional Catholic values in the church when they go through the process of selecting a new pope? Will we see the rise, of someone who's not in support of massive immigration, destroying sovereign values, pushing for all of this trans ideology and everything else? What do you think is going to happen?
God, I hope so. I really do. I'm praying that Cardinal Serra or Cardinal Burke becomes the next pope, because these are solid traditionalist Catholic bishops that would be wonderful for the church and for the world. And it's what we need right now. We're past the stage of bussing trannies into the Vatican. We're past the stage of moralizing experimental vaccines and lockdowns and comparing abortion with mass migration. We're past all of that now. We've been through it. It wasn't pleasant. We made it to the other side. I hope that Pope Francis repented before he passed, and I hope that he's gone home. I do hope that. However, the church deserves better now. It's time for the church to regain what it means to be Catholic. And we're on the church is on the brink of schism, actually, because the traditionalists have been essentially leaving. Vigano is a good example of people who've been excommunicated. Bishop Strickland is another one, America's bishop, good man, got cancelled out of his diocese. Cardinal Burke, another good man, got cancelled out of the Vatican. Like, it's time to stop cancelling the good, solid Catholic priests, bishops, and cardinals, and actually promote them so that the whole church can be lifted up. Because the church is unchanging. The whole point of sacred tradition is that it's something we adhere to because it's what Christ handed to the apostles and the apostles handed to the church generation after generation through apostolic succession. So to move away from tradition towards modernity is to move away from the church towards the world. That's not our job as a church, whether lay or ordained. Our job is to adhere to sacred scripture and sacred tradition, and through the gospels and the sacraments, to keep the faith as once delivered to the saints. We all have that duty. We all have the obligation, and we all have a right to challenge anyone that undermines that and heads us in the opposite direction. So pray that we have a sound, solid pontiff, Roman pontiff, Bishop of Rome, Western patriarch, and that he can lead us back into a united church that is sound on principle, on doctrine, and on theology.
Catherine in our chat says, bravo to what you are saying, Father. Yes. So a lot of people agree with you, myself included, on this. That is why you are the most canceled priest alive. And so I know you actually have a crowdfunding page as well, because what you've been speaking out against has really got you canceled by a lot of people. I hope that now this you are being embraced with these words in a large, much larger way. And I think you're vindicated. But anyway, can you tell us about your crowdfunding page? It's called democracy3.org, T-H-R-E-E.org, democracy3.org. And what are you hoping to accomplish there? It's called the most canceled man alive.
A little bit of hyperbole, but I have been cancelled an incredible amount. Firstly, by the Church of England, then the Conservative Party of Great Britain, and then my former TV network, GB News, which is trying to be the UK's version of Fox, but not quite as sound as Fox, even in Fox's day. And so, cancellation on top of cancellation. My most recent one was my church. And so I'm no longer able to say the public mass because my archbishop removed my faculties. Because he, well, anyway, for his reasons, which people can look into if they like, which means my church has been removed. My house is potentially being removed in the next few days or weeks. And so my good friends, the Reverend Brett Murphy and Lawrence Fox, set up a crowdfund just to give me some stability to continue doing this, my public ministry. And hopefully I'll get back to my parish ministry, God willing, in his good providence, when I'm able to find a solid bishop who I can be completely obedient to, but one who will be supportive and not be afraid of a woke bandwagon or a cancel mob. And that's what we need now. We need strong bishops who can stick their heads up above the parapet and proclaim the gospel, put forward, stand firm in the faith, put forward the name of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ unashamedly, unabashedly, and not be afraid of the world. In fact, to be more afraid of God than they are of the world. That's what we need. That's what we want. And that's what I'm praying for.
Father Calvin Robinson, again, the crowdfunding page, we'll link it up in the description for today's video. It's called democracy3.org, democracy3.org, if you want to help the Father. And I appreciate all your words on this. I think it's much needed right now. Father, great to see you. Thank you so much for your perspective.
God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow. What an interesting day today, huh? And what an interesting show. Unbelievable. A lot of people agreeing with you in the chat. And Vigano, I wonder if Vigano would be there. I don't know. Who knows? We will be watching. We'll be watching. Thoughts, feelings? What are you guys thinking? Anything? What are you guys thinking in the chat room? What are you guys thinking, David and Philip? Independent churches.
I don't have much to add to that.
I know. When someone speaks that well, it's like, okay, you got it.
I would like to listen to that guy's audiobook, whatever it is.
Yeah.
His voice was soothing.
I just think it's interesting, like young people like turning to that and just saying they're turning away from this. I see it in my kids and none of their friends are into this woke stuff. It's kind of remarkable. It's really remarkable. So interesting times. Well, thank you guys. Hey, we have a daily newsletter. And we publish it every morning, first thing in the morning when you wake up. You'll have it in your inbox, and it's the perfect way to start your day. It's totally free. We don't sell your information or anything like that. All you need to do is when you go to redacted.inc, just click on sign up for the newsletter, And then you'll receive a welcome email from me, which is just clayton@redacted.inc. And you just need to move it over to your inbox. It might go to your spam filter or junk folder. Gmail labels our newsletter as dangerous. You might even get a dangerous notification if you subscribe to our newsletter because they don't want you having this information. But you can read it about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee every morning. And it's a great way to stay informed about some of the big stories happening out there, stories that you're not going to see in the mainstream media. So just go to redacted.inc, sign up for our free newsletter. And I like to say it's sort of like the director's, or this show is kind of like the director's track to the newsletter, you know, the stories we cover there and all of that. So thank you guys for joining us today. We've got a couple of big conversations happening here in the Redacted studio. Very excited about that. Some big guests we're very excited to bring you. And yes, we're about to start building out the studio. So this is temporary. And all of like the aluminum and everything just arrived today. And David came over to help with the big truck delivery in the studio. And so we're getting ready to, and Philip, you're flying in, I think on what, Thursday? I think you're going to be here. And we're
getting Thursday.
Yep. Now the real work starts.
Yes. So the studio, the
it doesn't get real until I get there.
Exactly. When Philip shows up, the party started. So just know we've got a lot in store for you guys. We're going to really be building out a beautiful studio. So this is temporary as we move to the new space, and we're really excited about it. So anyway, thank you guys for joining us on this Wednesday, on this Monday. And we'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So thanks for subscribing. Thanks for being a part of our community. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.